Blog Talk Radio.
Do you want Detroit sports talk done right?
Yeah!
If you want it, you got it. It's Detroit sports talk with attitude. It's the Knee Jerks with Eno and Big Al.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like at this time to introduce to you one of the finest running backs in the United States of America and our number one pick, Barry Sanders.
Here's Isaiah. Let's see what we got. All the way up. Goal!
We might not be in your car or on your transistor radio, but we're bringing you the best of Detroit sports past, present, and future. It's Monday night, time for the Knee Jerks with two guys who know Detroit sports. Here's Greg Eno and Al Beaton.
It's Monday night, June 4th, 2012. You're listening to the Knee Jerks Detroit Sports Talk of Eno and Big Al. If it's 7 p.m. on Monday, that means you're listening to the Knee Jerks. I am Al Beaton, a.k.a. Big Al. You know me from sites such as blessyouboys.com and waynefonts.com. Every Monday night, they get together for the man to call the voice of reason, Mr. Excitement. And I think you need a little bit of rest after all the excitement of our third anniversary show. I know I did, which is why we took the week off, and that would be Mr. Greg Eno of gregeno.com. Greg, how you doing? And welcome back.
Thank you. Welcome back to you as well. Even though it's just 1 week, sometimes it feels like it's been more than that, you know, with all the stuff that happens in Detroit sports over the course of any, you know, given week. So it's good to be back. I am Greg Eno from GregEno.com. That's where you can read me every day of the week. And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/GregEno. Follow the Knee Jerks on Twitter. TheKneeJerks.info is the way to do that. And our blog, of course, is TheKneeJerks.us. And our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/TheKneeJerks. And that's how you can keep apprised what's going on with the program. And speaking of the program, this is the beginning of Season 4, Al. This is officially the beginning of Season 4. And what better way to start our guest segment of Season 4 next week on the 11th than by having our old friend Bob Page on.
Oh, yeah.
Bob was not able to join us for the anniversary show, but that's okay. This gives us a chance to get more Bob Page.
Yeah, he deserves all the time he wants, if you ask me. So
right, exactly. So we would have loved to have had him on the anniversary show, but this is going to work out just as well. We'll have him next week on June 11th. And I'm working on something else, Al. I know I've said this before, but I'm pretty sure I have even more confidence going to happen this time. My old friend, a guy I went to high school with, whose team is in the Stanley Cup Finals, Mike Donnelly. Mike is a scout now for the Los Angeles Kings. And, of course, Mike played on the last Los Angeles Kings team that made the Stanley Cup Finals back in 1993 when they played Montreal. Mike is doing some scouting, and, of course, he's really involved and busy with the Stanley Cup Finals. So sometime after the finals, he tells me he'll be on the program. So we'll look forward to having him on either late June or sometime in July and talk about his career at Michigan State and in the NHL and everything like that. So that'll be fun. Tonight we have Adam Diggers from Yahoo Sports. Adam, of course, is one of our auxiliary jerks, and he's here tonight to rant at 7:45 for another edition of Adam Rants. So that's what's going to happen tonight. But before we do any of that, as I always say, it's time for Whose Birthday Is It, Maestro?
Man, you know what happens? I'm so used to not not doing this for a week.
It didn't take much to throw you off kilter.
Yeah, no damn kidding. Just like Justin Bertrand, you know, start 8 minutes late, you're just lost. So, all right, here we go.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
That means, of course, that it's time for Whose Birthday Is It? We have not done this since May 14th because we didn't do it for the anniversary show. I give Al a couple of clues and the identity of an individual whose birthday is today in the world of sports, and then Al tries to guess who that is. Tonight, we do have a person in the world of baseball. He was born on this date in 1957, still very much alive. He was born in Monte Cristi, Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. He was signed by the Pittsburgh Pirates as an amateur free agent in 1975, originally as an outfielder, but that is not where he made his living in the big leagues. He switched positions in 1977 where he would eventually be a five-time All-Star and a four-time Gold Glove winner at the new position. And he made his big league debut in September of 1980 with Pittsburgh and finished sixth the next season, in 1981, in the Rookie of the Year voting of the National League.
Well, Sitter and I wasn't really following the Pirates at that point, especially since that is a little post just a hair past the We Are Family bunch and
right.
the Willie Stargell, Phil Garner, that group. I'm going to have to let my brain kind of settle in here and and go from there. So I'm going to pass on this question, wait for number two, and hopefully you'll be a little more maybe it'll give me even more or actually just give it away. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's what you're always waiting for, that giveaway. The giveaway. Fair enough. Okay, I know there's a lot to talk about, not only because we haven't done a regular show in 3 weeks, but there is literally a lot to talk about.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a surprising amount to talk about, considering we're going to talk about three teams tonight, and two of them are in the offseason, but when you when one of the teams loses essentially a cornerstone of the franchise, a Hall of Fame bound defenseman in Nick Lidstrom, well, that pretty much tops. That's above the fold, no matter what you want to talk about. And,
right.
and considering how this vastly changes, and really in a way, the end of the year for the Red Wings. And there's a lot to talk about in regard to Nick Lidstrom's legacy. What's next for the Red Wings, since they have a ton of cap money. And of course, there's also the question of who will now be the next captain, because essentially it's been Steve Yzerman for damn near 20 years, and then Nick Lidstrom for since. So there's kind of a question as to who's that's going to be. Let alone there's also been, as usual, the offseason from hell continued with the Detroit Lions. Nick Fairley was arrested driving drunk at 100 miles an hour. Titus Young was busy sucker punching Louis Delmas. And of course, your typical. That's another typical couple of weeks in the NFL. Unfortunately, that's the kind of stuff we don't want to talk about. But it's a big deal for the Lions right now, because there's a lot of questions as to, is this just boys being boys, or is there something more institutional going on here? And of course, I've been avoiding this, but the Detroit Tigers are still kind of scuffling along, muddling along at 4 games under .500. A lot going on there since we last talked about them. Ryan Rayburn's from Central Toledo. Quentin Berry has actually been quite a surprise, but the DL is quickly filling up with players. Doug Fister, Austin Jackson, Andy Dirks, let alone the guys who've been under for quite some time, such as Victor Martinez. So there's also the accountability thing. Jim Leland wants accountability from umpires, but are we asking for enough accountability from Leland and Dave Dombrowski, for that matter? And, of course, we'll kind of discuss where they stand right now and where the Tigers are going to go in the rest of the season, because despite all the moaning and bitching and crying, there's still two-thirds of the season to go. So things are not over by any stretch of the imagination. But, Greg, we got to start with Nick Lidstrom. What do you think? Nick Lidstrom has to lead off everything, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's hard to, I guess, to bury this. Get it over with, talk about it, and hopefully we'll feel better as the show moves along.
Yeah, because this is, if you've been listening to the podcast, we've brought this up a few times, considering we've been doing this show for over three years now. This has been pretty much a big topic of any offseason move the Wings have done, because they always had to wait for Nick Lidstrom to decide if he was going to return for another year. Rumors were running rampant that this was going to be his last year, and turned out to be true. Last Thursday, Nick Lidstrom retired after 20 years in the NHL, all with the Detroit Red Wings. He's won 4 Stanley Cups. He's what they call member of the Triple Gold Club, in that he's won a Stanley Cup, won a World Championship with us, won a World Championship, and has also won an Olympic gold medal, all of Sweden, obviously. He's the first European captain to win a Stanley Cup. He's the first European Conn Smythe winner, the MVP of the playoffs. He's won 7 Norris Trophies, a 12-time All-Star, 10 times first team All-NHL. Never missed the playoffs in 20 years. He's the all-time leader in games played with one team by European players. And, of course, that's just scratching the surface of everything Nick Lidstrom's done. He has done everything an athlete could do in his selected sport and then some. So it's with this, though, Greg, there's a lot going on with this and that. One, It's going to be a huge change for the fan base because, in a lot of ways, this really does close out an era. Lidstrom's retired. It doesn't look like Thomas Holmstrom is going to come back. He's still on the fence if he's going to retire. Even if he does come back, I doubt it's going to be in very limited minutes. But really, a lot of ways, Nick Lidstrom was the last cornerstone, the last link to the team that really sent the Wings onto this 20-year reign as Stanley Cup contenders. I know, going back to the winning of the Cup in 97. So, you know, it's Nick Lidstrom, you know, for a lot, you know, he's arguably the best defenseman in the NHL history. If not, he's probably considered top three. And that's amazing. The shoes to fill are huge, but, Greg, more so than that, it's just like it's going to leave this monstrous hole in just the franchise and the Detroit Red Wings and the Steak, because for a big part of this fan base, he has always been there. And it's going to be a change for everybody, from the Red Wings themselves and how the team is run from here on out, and the fan base as well, because this man leaves such a monstrous legacy that, you know, we have to think of it this way. It's like losing Gordie Howe. It's like losing Steve Yzerman. It's, you know, it's like losing a Barry Sanders or something like that. It's literally, when you lose a Hall of Fame player, it really does change a team, and oftentimes it doesn't change it for the better.
Well, you know, in Detroit, we're always so, self-conscious of our image and self-conscious of how others feel about us, whether it's the media or whomever, frankly. Mm-hmm. And when you have a player like Lidstrom, you know, that was always the one guy that, you know, whenever the Red Wings came to town or were on national television or were talked about it by the national folks, there was always, you knew that sooner or later during the course of any given game that was covered by national media, for example, you knew that the talk was going to come to Lidstrom, and there was going to be, you know, just a lot of kudos about his play and a lot of fawning over him. And it's nice to have a player like that. You know, you mentioned Barry Sanders and Yzerman and other, you know, iconic figures in Detroit sports history who, you know, were also media darlings in the sense that they really enthralled the media, and that media seemed to really, you know, take to these guys, and they're all very humble. All the guys you mentioned are very, you know, very humble, unassuming guys, and that, I think, makes them more appealing to certainly the media. I don't know about fans in general, but
right,
certainly the media likes that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, when you have a guy like that, it was always, you know, you always knew that it was nice having someone like that that was so iconic and so good at what he did, far, you know, head and shoulders above anybody else. You lose that. Now you become, there's this kind of this hangover that says, well, now we're just another team. You know, now we're just another team that doesn't have Nick Lidstrom, like the other 29 teams in the NHL didn't have Nick Lidstrom. Now we're one of those 29 teams. I mean, we're one of those teams that doesn't have him. But, you know, I pointed out in a column I wrote over the weekend about this that, you know, Red Wings fans ought to, you know, obviously it's not a pleasant time right now, but look at who's playing for the Stanley Cup right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Los Angeles Kings and New Jersey Devils. Now, that's no disrespect, but how many of us had the Kings and the Devils in our preseason picks? It just goes to show you once again how the NHL is very unpredictable when it comes to the postseason. And what I was trying to point out was, you know, fans don't lose heart because there have been a lot of teams that have won the Stanley Cup or have played for the Stanley Cup that did not have the greatest defenseman in the world on their roster. And this is one of those years. I mean, look, the Kings and the Devils, again, you know, we're talking about two low-seeded teams that not a whole lot of people expected, certainly not this much from. And so, you know, okay, maybe the Red Wings won't be elite right away. Maybe they'll be just another one of those teams that's scratching and clawing to A, make the playoffs, or B, make some noise once they're there. But, you know, a lot of teams have done that and done that successfully. You know, the difference being that the Red Wings have been there year after year after year in the discussion as Cup contenders, and now they're probably not going to be. And that's just part of that whole fallout of not having Nick Lidstrom. It's part of that process you have to go through. You have to, you know, kind of just accept the fact that your team is not going to be probably considered elite. You know, of course, we're saying all this. It's almost a month before free agency. We don't know what the Red Wings might do free agent-wise. You know, who knows? They might make a splash. They might make some trades. Something might happen that just might put them back into that conversation come September. I don't know. But right now, everybody's kind of, I don't think it's really sunk in. I don't know about you, but I watched this whole thing. You know, I watched the press conference, of course, on Thursday, and I didn't really, and I wrote about it, and I wrote about it over the weekend, too, with Kenny Holland, and I just didn't, it hasn't really, I don't think, sunk in until, you know, you start to see those guys play, and you start to realize that he's not there.
Yeah, it's, no, you're right. When it's really going to hit us, you know, it's not. All right, it's the off season. There's a lot of other things to kind of keep us occupied. Obviously, you know, Tigers, free agency, any other sports that are going on, so on and so forth. But you're right. This is really going to hit us when that puck drops on opening night, and then Nick Lidstrom's not there. And actually, what's going to happen is I'm sure his numbers will be put in the rafters that night. At least that's what I would hope. And what's really interesting about this, Greg, you know, with Lindstrom. Retiring is, well, you know, I kind of mentioned that, you know, that this is going to leave, obviously it's going to be a big change in culture and a big change in the team itself. But my fear is, as you know, you said, maybe this is going to return us to a time where the wings are going to claw and scratch and everything else. Well, let me ask you this then. We'll kind of jump all around with this a little bit, but that kind of then leads to, the Red Wings have, depending on where the cap is, $22 to $26 million to spend underneath the salary cap right now. Obviously, Nick Lindstrom is a monstrous hole to fill. But let's not forget, Brad Stewart, who's a free agent, is not returning either. Well, he wants to keep playing. He just wants to play in the West Coast. The Wings realize that, and they're going to honor his wishes. So they need to replace two, essentially, top four defensemen. Let alone, we know this team is short on firepower. They need someone who can put the puck in the net. So, since we're talking about the Wings are losing a Hall of Fame defenseman, they're losing Brad Stewart. You know, is pretty much an all-star level defenseman. He is definitely a top four guy. Let alone the scoring thing. Common wisdom says the Wings must go big time in free agency, and there's two big fish right now that are unrestricted. New Jersey Devils, Zach Parise, and the Nashville Predators, Ryan Suter. So, Greg, is it Suter and Parise or bust? Many are saying if Ken Holland doesn't land both of these guys, this offseason will be a complete failure, and the Wings are maybe not just clawing and scratching, they will be a team that probably won't make the playoffs because the talent level drops steeply in free agency once you get past those two players. The Wings can afford them. The Wings have a need for both of them. So I'm of the thinking, they got to go in whole hog if they want to stay at the level they're at. And I think Mike Ilitch does. I'm sure Ken Holland does, and we know Mike Babcock does. Do you think that the Wings are going to try and go all in on these two and try to keep this team at a level we're accustomed to, or do you think there could be a chance that maybe not a full-scale rebuilding, but there might be a rebuilding period that may knock the Wings out of the playoffs for a couple of years?
Well, you know, it all depends, Al, on which direction the Red Wings choose to go in terms of, I mean, let's face it, they're going to have to reinvent themselves to a degree. You know, you can't just lose a guy like Lidstrom, and you mentioned Stewart, and by the way, that's something that nobody's really talked a lot about. I know why, because, you know, Lidstrom's such a high-profile guy, but you know, Brad Stewart is a huge loss for this team. And don't forget, last year they lost Brian Rafalski to retirement. So they've lost three. They will probably end up losing three of their top four defensemen between Stewart, Lidstrom, and Rafalski within a year or so.
And let's not forget about Kyle Quincy's question mark as well.
Kyle Quincy's a question mark. And, you know, obviously we'll talk about Nick Cronwall in a little bit. But you know, you can't just lose guys like this and say, well, you know, we'll just plug other guys in and keep that culture, you know, the Red Wing way and all that other stuff. It's not that kind of a situation. I mean, so what Ken Holland has to do among his shopping list over the summer is try to determine, and this is where he needs to get with Mike Babcock and the coaching staff and figure out, okay, now what kind of a team do we want to be now? This, you know, this in a way, and I know it sounds like I'm trying to spin this positively, but in a way, this Lidstrom thing kind of gives the Red Wings an opportunity and plus the money they have, obviously, to spend, gives them an opportunity to kind of determine, okay, maybe this is a good time to assess where we're at as a team and figure out now, where, you know, do we want to be a you know, a high scoring Philadelphia Flyers type team, or do we want to be physical, or do we want to be just big time on defense and really just try to win a lot of low scoring games? There's a lot of different things they need to determine in terms of which direction they're going to go in as an organization, as they say in the NHL.
Yeah.
And I don't know, obviously, I don't know what that direction is going to be. Guys like Parise and Suter, though, the good news about them is that they pretty much fit whatever mold you're going to build. I mean, you know, whatever direction you decide to go in, it's not going to exclude either of those guys. Because mm-hmm. both of those guys would be big-time components of any team's direction in the NHL because they're that good of players. So, you know, I mean, I don't know if when you say is that those guys are busts, that insinuates that if they don't, you know, that there's doomsday ahead if they don't get either of them. I would hope they would at least get one of them.
Yeah. There will be people that will say that, though.
For sure. There's no question about that. Well, absolutely. and that's because, you know, they've got the money. They've got the, you know, supposedly the Red Wing name, you know, just the brand name. You know, the original six, all that other stuff they've got going for them. So, it would be a big disappointment to a lot of the people around here if they weren't able to land both of those guys. It would almost seem like some fans would take it as an affront. That's like, what do you mean? You don't want to play for the Red Wings. What are you talking about? So, you know, it's really an opportunity. And I hope that the management team kind of looks at it this way. This is not, it shouldn't be looked at as doom and gloom as much as, okay, this might be kind of fun. Let's try to reinvent the Red Wings. Let's take the components that we already have. Don't forget, they still have a lot of good players. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were hurt by injuries last year. You know, guys like Danny Cleary just were not able to play to the level that they were accustomed, largely because of injury. They've still got a lot of talented people in the organization, a lot of younger players, a lot of a good mix of veterans. And this is not a team that is going to go away just instantly just like that. With the proper tweaking and additions. And we know, as well as I do, that they're not going to sit by idly. They're not going to let this thing crumble. Mike Gilchrist is 82, 83 years old. He doesn't have time for a teardown or a rebuild. They've got to do this thing on the fly. It's not unlike, Al, what the Pistons were confronted with under Joe Dumars. But, of course, the difference there was the Pistons have probably waited too long to reload and now found themselves in a rebuild situation kind of by their own doing. The Red Wings won't do that, of course. They'll try to do this, change this thing on the fly, and it's kind of apropos because hockey is a change-on-the-fly sport, and so now they're going to have to change on the fly with the personnel.
Yeah, it's quite a conundrum, you know, because you're right. They could go in several different directions as to how they rebuild this team. And then we do need to keep in mind as well is that you're right. There is a mixture of youth and veterans on this team, and a few of these veterans aren't getting that much younger, that are well into their 30s, you know, the Zetterbergs and the Datsuks and the Fronsons and the like. But this could be exciting, but also keep in mind fans tend to be fickle, and if this team is putzing along a few games under 500 halfway through the year, well, look how they're reacting to the Tigers right now. This is a fan base that has been spoiled, to put it bluntly, shitless. You know, 20 years of playoffs, almost every one of those years being thought of as having a decent shot at winning the Stanley Cup. Four Stanley Cups, countless times to the Western Conference Finals. I just got to wonder how this fan base would react if this team doesn't gel. You know, say they do get some big name free agents. You make a good point that they may not gel right away. We're seeing that right now with the Tigers, and you know, I just got to wonder how this fan base would react if the Red Wings don't play to their accustomed high level, and it's very possible that they may not.
Well, It's possible that they may not, but the difference between the Tigers situation and the Red Wings situation is that it seems like the Tigers did not do a very good job of recognizing the holes that they had, and frankly, their organization is not nearly as deep.
Finding that out for sure.
I mean, there's no question about that. But secondly, I mean, the Red Wings have they have a hallmark of being good defensively, and getting scoring from third and fourth line guys. That's kind of been their hallmark, especially in the playoffs. And when they've won cups and in the years when they've come close to winning cups, they've gotten, you know, production from guys like Danny Cleary and Justin Aldicator and you know, guys of that sort, you know, the third and fourth line guys you don't expect to get a lot of. That's what that's kind of been their hallmark. I wrote about Kenny Holland over the weekend. I said, you know, part of the genius of Kenny Holland's scouting department, and he is a scout himself, wasn't just finding the next Gretzky and Yzerman. It was finding the next, you know, third and fourth line guys, so the next great penalty killer, the next great, you know, pest, the next great second line guy, the next great mucker, the next great grinder. Those are the kinds of players that they've been able to unearth. Guys like Franz and Holmstrom, those guys who are willing to, you know, do the dirty work, the blue collar guys that you know, sacrifice their body on a nightly basis to make things happen in front of the net and what have you. Those are the kind of players that the Red Wings have been able to, as an organization, unearth when other teams just haven't been able to do that. And I made the other thing I talked about was, look at franchises like the New York Islanders, who haven't been heard from in 30 years.
Yeah.
New York Islanders won four straight Stanley Cups, and you haven't heard a peep out of them since then.
Yeah.
That was almost 30 years ago. You know, so the Red Wings, to be at this level for this long, And I know you're saying about the fan base, and you're right. I mean, if they sign Suter and they sign Parise, they're going to start printing Stanley Cup Finals tickets. Mentally, I understand that.
Oh yeah.
But you know, it just doesn't work out that way. They're going to need other pieces, other components, but they've got money to do that. They're going to have to. But you know, it's like anything else. Guys are going to have to step up. Nicholas Cronwall, this is a golden opportunity for him now. To seize the moment, this could be his finest hour. Younger guys who are coming through the system, the Kindles and the Brendan Smiths and guys like that, this is the time now to really start to exert themselves and present themselves as, you know, legitimate, you know, NHL players, because the Red Wings have still a lot of talent, but people have got to play up to their potential. It's just like, and that is where you see a corollary between the Red Wings and the Tigers, because the Tigers don't have a lot of guys right now that are playing up to what we believe their potential is.
Yeah, yeah. And for all the talk of bringing in big-name free agents, you know, and obviously there's those two we've been talking about. Now, I found it interesting, in Nashville, there's talk that Suter does not want to come to Detroit or wouldn't come to Detroit because he doesn't want to be the guy who replaces the guy. You know, he doesn't want to be the one to replace the shoes of Nick Lidstrom. Personally, I find that kind of ridiculous, because we're talking about an all-star level player here, a man who has talent to be all first team NHL. He's that kind of a player,
right?
And I really doubt that if he doesn't come to Detroit, it's going to be because he doesn't want to replace Nick Lidstrom. I think more than anything else, when you're talking about professional athletes, you give them the money, more often than not, they're going to come. Except for, you know, you'll have the occasional issue like we have with Stewart, where he wants to play in a certain geographical area. And I find it kind of – I think it's more wishful thinking than the people of Nashville. I think right now they're grasping at straws, trying to think of any way they can. Or, you know, if they keep telling themselves these things enough, they'll actually start to believe it. That, oh, you know, we'll be able to keep him because, you know, he doesn't want to replace Lidstrom, or he doesn't want to move here. And realistically, you know, when you look at some of the options this guy is going to have, if I'm Nashville, I'm looking for someone to replace him, because I don't see him staying, let alone the fact that he could end up in an original six city with a huge contract. And rather than being in a Sun Belt city where it's a third string sport. So, I just find the Nashville point of view on the Suter situation to be kind of naive.
Well, you know, it is to a degree. I can see where. Well, let's go back and so let's go back to when Dominic Hasek won the Stanley Cup with the Red Wings and then retired in 2002. Mm-hmm. Retired the first of many times he retired. Red Wings, you know, could barely wait until July 1st, and they signed Curtis Joseph. Right? I mean, you know, veteran goalie. It was looked at by a lot of fans as being, okay, we lost Hasek, but we have Joseph, you know, another high quality goalie. He had another guy who had not won a Stanley Cup, but who had played at a very high level, and his you know, was I remember that vividly. People around here were very comfortable with Curtis Joseph coming in and thought that he was going to be, the Red Wings were just going to pick up right where they left off because they had Curtis Joseph, and they weren't going to notice any appreciable difference between he and Dominic Hasek.
Yeah.
Well, I think that in that case, I think that there was pressure, and there was a very evident feeling among the fans that Curtis Joseph was supposed to replace Dominic Hasek.
Yeah.
But if you look at this situation now, like you're 10 years later, with you know, the word that I keep, so the two words that keep popping up when I read about Nick Lidstrom locally and nationally, one of them, of course, is perfect. And the other one that I keep reading is irreplaceable, and I used it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Irreplaceable. And that's a word that a lot of fans have used. And I don't think, Al, that Ryan Suter should worry about coming here and to be thought of in any way, shape, or form as a suitable replacement for Nick Lidstrom.
Right.
Because I just don't think that's the sentiment right now. I don't think the sentiment in Detroit is, okay, we've lost Nick Lidstrom.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go out and get Ryan Suter and everything will be hunky-dory. I don't think that's the feeling. I think that the feeling is that we need to get Ryan Suter because we need to build the back end.
Yeah.
Back up again. But I don't think it's looked at as a tit-for-tat thing. So I don't think that Ryan Suter should worry about there being some sort of a feeling that if he were to sign in Detroit, he's got to replace Nick Lidstrom tit-for-tat. Now, he may not sign here for other reasons. It may be that he doesn't want to play on a team. It may be that he wanted to play with Nick Lidstrom, and now that's not possible, that may make other teams, you know, in play in terms of getting his services. You know, if he doesn't sign with the Red Wings, I don't think it's going to be because of that. I think, you know, I'm with you. You know, he's a good enough of a player that, frankly, he might, you know, players like that tend to gravitate to those kind of challenges anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he's going to have to worry about. I don't think there's a feeling around town that the Wings are just going to lose Lister and sign Suter and then that we'll call it even, because it's not.
Right. Yeah, and they won't have to with all this cap room they have as well. I mean, that's another selling point, is that, you know, they can tell him, you know, you will be getting some help. You know, we have a lot of money to spend, and we are not just going to say, sign you and call it a day, because that's not what I don't think that's to go to Red Wings or planning, and that's not going to be acceptable to the fan base, that's at the very least. And this also begs the question with the retirement of Lidstrom. Hockey captains are a big deal, Greg. As we've mentioned often on the podcast, and as I mentioned kind of in the introduction to this into the segment, you know, because Lidstrom set a lot of firsts as a European captain. But now the question is, who becomes Red Wings' next captain? I think a lot of people are almost convinced it's going to be Henrik Zetterberg. A veteran, great player. Known to be a leader on the team, a cornerstone player of the Red Wings, and who was under contract for a very long time. But you could also make an argument for Pavel Datsyuk, and you can make an argument for Nick Cronwall as well. There's probably a couple other players that you could throw in the mix, and let alone there's also been talk of, if you sign Suter, make him the captain, which I find kind of ridiculous. In baseball, in other sports, you could probably get away with stuff like that. That doesn't necessarily fly in hockey.
No, not at all.
But, who do you think? I personally think it is going to be Henrik Zetterberg, but who do you think will end up being the next Red Wings captain for the next, usually as this happens, it'll be for several years?
Well, you know, I think if there was any doubt about who the next captain was going to be, I think that Henrik Zetterberg kind of, in my mind, erased those doubts during the playoffs this past spring when he was, without question, I know it was a short series, it was only 5 games, but he was, without question, the best player the Red Wings had on the ice on a nightly basis. It wasn't even close. He was killing penalties. He was creating scoring chances. You could just tell that he really was trying to lead by example. He was trying to put the team on his back and do whatever he could to make that series work. Of course, it didn't. But I think that series right there kind of showed me, and I'm not saying he was playing to be the next captain. Believe me, I'm not saying that at all. But I think that those kinds of performances, so fresh in the mind, ought to count for a lot. And I think that, you know, obviously he's got the longevity. He's been here a while. He's obviously done very well in the postseason in the past. He's been part of cup-winning teams. He's been part of the whole culture here. So I don't see why there's any, you know, even though he's Swedish, he's got a very good handle on the language, English language, just like Nick Lidstrom did. So I don't think there's any question in my mind. Mm-hmm. Henrik Zetterberg would be the ideal captain. I think captains tend to work better, with the exception of Lidstrom, when they're forwards playing on the top six. Because let's face it, goal scoring is where it happens. That's
right.
How you win games. And mm-hmm. guys who can go out there, like Heisman used to do, Steve Heisman used to do, and take over games. You know, there's not a lot of defensemen now, I guess what I'm saying, that can take over a game. But
right.
certainly forwards can. And
mm-hmm.
certainly Henrik Zetterberg's the kind of guy that can make a big difference on a nightly basis, getting the time that he gets on the ice. So I think Zetterberg would be a great captain.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that's what it'll end up being Zetterberg. But it's, again, something else that'll occupy Red Wings forums and blogs and the like for the next several months until free agency starts, and they'll get obsessed with that. But before we wrap up on the Lidstrom stuff, Greg, I guess we should kind of think about Lidstrom's legacy. I mean, one thing people kind of forget, as appreciated as he was for the second half of his career as probably the best defenseman in the NHL, and, you know, maybe the best definitely the best defenseman of his generation, and possibly the best defenseman ever. In a lot of ways, he flew under the radar for the first, so say, 10 or so years of his career. In a lot of ways, you know, if he hadn't been so, well... you know, kind of flying under the radar, he could have won a few more Norris trophies. Let alone, there's always a fact, especially early on in Lidstrom's career, there was definitely, especially with the Canadian NHL media, a bias against European players. And
right.
it took the Wings to winning a lot of games with the Swedes and Russians and the like to kind of shut them all up and get them to do the right thing and actually vote for these guys for awards. But you know, as I mentioned before, he's the first European to win the Conn Smythe. He was the first European to captain a team that won a Stanley Cup. As I mentioned, he's one of the few who have won it's now considered the triple club, with the triple gold club of a Stanley Cup, a World Championship, and Olympic gold medal. I can't think of anything this guy hasn't done, you know, other than the Hall of Fame, and that's pretty much a given as soon as he's eligible. He's a first ballot guy, so it's amazing that for as big of, you know, as for a greatest career he had, for at least half of it, he was really underrated, if anything.
You know, Jamie Samuelson, our good friend Jamie Samuelson, I was listening to him the other night talking about Lidstrom, of course, this is the day of the retirement.
Right.
And he made a good point. He said, and I hadn't really thought about this. He said, but you know what? He said, for all the Norris trophies that Nick Lidstrom won, he said, I'm surprised, and maybe because it's the Norris trophy, the defensemen had their own trophy, the Norris
mm-hmm.
trophy. He said, I was surprised that there wasn't at least one year where he was in the talk as being one of the finalists for the Hart trophy, the most valuable player of the league. And I hadn't really thought of it. I hadn't really thought of that, frankly. And there was never anybody who really wrote about it in town that said, you know, why is Nick Lidstrom not being considered as the most valuable player?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's the best defenseman, which for so many years he was considered, then why does that preclude him from being also considered the best player in the National Hockey League? Now, again, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, that whole argument, should a pitcher be an MVP? You know, should a defenseman who has an award already, you know, that he wins
mm-hmm.
specifically for defenseman, you know, should he also be, you know, no, because there's no such award for the best forward in the NHL. So
right.
Should he be eligible? Not eligible, but I mean, I know he's eligible, but should he be considered by the people who vote as being an MVP candidate? And obviously he never was, because he was never ever in all of his years ever in the final to be MVP. I mean, he never was. But I think, I just think the best way to really just kind of pay homage to him as a legacy is
mm-hmm.
just sit down. I mean, a hockey person like you, or somebody who's been around for a long time, just sit down and say, look, who was better?
Yeah.
And kind of rack my brain and try to think of, it's not so much about how good was Nick Lidstrom,
mm-hmm.
but let's just ask the question, who was better?
Yeah.
And I think really the only name that is going to come up is Bobby Orr. And the reason why is because Bobby Orr is going to get a lot of style points for essentially changing the position of defenseman from the stay-at-home, plodding
mm-hmm.
guy who scores one goal a year
right.
to this this essentially a fourth forward, which we had never seen before. And so Orr you know, burst on the scene in a career that was tragically cut short by knee injury. And I can't imagine. He won, you know, so many Norris trophies with such a short. He almost won it every year he played. I mean, that's how that's how his percentage was, because he was just, he didn't play very long. He only played, I think, like 9 years, and I think he won the Norris Trophy 8 times.
Right.
So that's the only guy, Al, that you're really going to get, to me, any sort of an argument. And really, Al, they're two different. It's kind of like comparing Barry Sanders to Jim Brown. I mean, you know, one had all the style, and the other one had, you know, the power and the and Jim Brown essentially also in a way kind of reinvented the position of running back, because he combined speed with size, which hadn't really been done before. There were a lot of big guys that, you know, prior to Jim Brown, Marion Motley and guys like that, but I mean, nobody really combined power and size with the speed that Jim Brown had, and that was the, I think, the thing that set him apart from other big backs. And let's face it, Jim Brown was a big back, was the speed that he had, and of course the strength. So those are the only two guys, in my mind, Al, I mean, those are the only two guys that you can even put in the conversation of who was the best defenseman ever. I know people will say Ray Bourque, people will say Larry Robinson, and those are very, very good guys, very good players. But I just don't think that what they did can overshadow what Bobby Orr did or what Nick Listerman did. And Bobby Orr gets the style points, and Bobby Orr gets the credit for, you know, introducing offense to a defenseman. But frankly, I think the jury is still out on how good of a defender that Bobby Orr was. I know Bobby Orr was, he used his speed a lot to get back into plays. And he would go out, he would, you know, jump into play, of course, like I said, the fourth forward all the time.
Right.
And part of his greatness was being able to come back with his speed when he had two good legs and come back and disrupt the play back in his own end. I mean, there's no question. I'm not for a second suggesting that Bobby Orr was weak defensively. I just don't know that his defensive prowess was as good, or his defensive guile was as good as Nick Lidstrom's was. But then again, you could turn it around and say that Bobby Orr was far better than Nick Lidstrom offensively. So, you know, so I think that you pretty much just have to kind of talk about those two guys. It's a great barroom discussion. It's a great discussion to have over some beer and some pretzels. You know, who was the better defenseman, Bobby Orr or Nick Lidstrom? Of course it's apples and oranges. You and I know that. But it's still fun to talk about, because those are the only two guys, Al, that really, you, to me, you can put in that discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I heard it described best. I think it was, I forgot where I read this. It might have been one of a hockey blog or, you know, somewhere in ESPN, one of the columnists there. And they put it this way when trying to determine who was a better hockey, you know, who was the better defenseman, you know, who was the greatest of all time. And someone put it this way. If I needed a goal to win, if it's the final minute of the game and I need a goal to win, I want Bobby Orr in the blue line. If it's in the last minute of the game and I need to keep the other team from scoring to win the game, I want Nick Lidstrom on the blue line. And I think that pretty much kind of describes the difference in the game. You were definitely right. It's an argument that will probably go on for ages until another player comes along, you know, in the next few decades that could be thrown in there. And, yeah, there's been a handful of other names mentioned. You can mention Bourque, Doug Harvey. It's a very, very small group of players who need to be thought of. But, yeah, I think right
now. You know what you can do, Al? You know what you can do? You can pretty much, you know, if you now you can maybe consider this as being a cop-out, but really what you can do is you can – each of those guys, you just mentioned four guys right there, Harvey, Bourque, and Lidstrom, who I think you can pretty much kind of chop up into four different segments of time in hockey.
Yeah,
I think Doug Harvey was probably the best defenseman of his time in terms of being just a flat-out a defenseman. I mean,
the stay-at-home defenseman you mentioned earlier.
Right, He wasn't expected to contribute anything offensively, was strictly there to keep the other team from scoring. Then you've got Orr, who came along right after Harvey, and then he, you know, we talked about him. And then you had Bourque, who came after Orr, and then he bridged the gap to Lidstrom. So really, you have four guys there. If you want to kind of, you know, if it makes it easier for people to do it this way and say that those were four best, and they each had their own time. You know, Harvey had the 50s, Orr had the 60s, and parts of the 70s, and Bourque had parts of the 70s and all of the 80s, and a little bit of the 90s, well, most of the 90s, and he had his time. So that's, or Bourque really had the 80s and 90s,
right.
More accurate. And then and then Lidstrom, you know, had his time.
Yeah.
So I think that that's kind of maybe the best way to put it. Those were the four guys But if you absolutely have to whittle it down to one guy, I don't think you're gonna get much argument from anybody who says or, unless they're from Detroit, and you don't think you'll get much argument from people who say listen, unless you're from Boston.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
I think that both of those guys can lay claim to that. It's just one of those fun debates to talk about. You can talk all day, and you're probably not going to change the mind of anybody who's got their mindset on Orr or Lidstrom. No matter what the other guy says, they're probably not going to change the mind of the person who's got their mindset. But that's part of the fun as well.
All right, and Greg, it's time for.
It's the horn. It's the horn. And that means it's time
everybody's
for,
got cover.
Yeah. It's time for Adam Rantz. Yahoo Sports' Adam Biggers is here. By the way, we should mention, Al, that Adam tried to be here for our anniversary show a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Technical difficulties kept him off the air. We apologize for that. We would have loved to have had Adam join us. I will also say that after we get done with Adam's segment here, I will give Al clue number two.
Yeah.
Whose birthday is it? Just to kind of let people know about that. We have not forgotten about whose birthday is it. We'll get to that after we talk to Adam Biggers from Yahoo Sports. Adam, thanks for being here tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Happy belated anniversary. Sorry about the technical difficulties a couple weeks ago.
That's okay. Thank you. We'll take those congratulations anytime.
I'll take it as the show went pretty well since you guys took a week off, though.
Oh, yeah.
We always take a week off, but this was a special. I know Al probably could have taken a couple weeks off. He was one of the things he said at the end of the show was, "We're going to tape this damn thing next time." But it was a lot of fun. I was expecting it. I was expecting there to be some chaos and not knowing if people were on the air. It's kind of part of the fun of the whole show. But anyway, Adam's here. He's going to talk. He's going to do his usual thing where he rants for a couple minutes, and then Al and I will respond. And Adam, the floor is yours.
Okay, well, I appreciate it, guys. I actually have a couple topics, and I guess the first one I'll lead off with is how the Detroit Lions are handling Nick Fairley. I know that I actually just read a column off of a website stating that Gunther Cunningham wants to take a soft approach, and I think that's sending Fairley the wrong message right now as far as just coddling a guy who obviously that's his way or the highway. So I think if you're bowing down to him and coddling him a little bit, it's going to just reinforce that mentality that he can get his way no matter what, and that it's kind of showing, it's almost taking the authority away from the team if they're going to walk on eggshells around him. Well, I do understand that apparently he had a rough background, and guys like that don't often respond well to harsh criticism. I think at this point you have to, if you're Nick Fairley, you have to look at what you have. You have an NFL career, you have a lot of high expectations, and you have a high likelihood of blowing that opportunity based on just recent behavior. Nick Fairley, I believe, is a very talented athlete. I think he is going to be a great productive defensive tackle for the Lions. But part of me just can't get over the fact that in such a short time span he was busted. Now, that doesn't mean those are the only two times he was doing it, and I don't want to speculate and say that he was doing it more, but he might be the unluckiest guy around because, both times he was riding around with marijuana or drinking, he in fact did get caught. I think that the Lions need to take a little bit more aggressive approach with Nick Fairley and let him know to, shape up or ship out. My second part of the rant is regarding Draymond Green. You guys know about Draymond living in Michigan and following Big Ten basketball, but it seems like the rest of the nation is kind of just catching up on actually how special of a player he was at Michigan State. I never viewed Draymond just solely based off skill as a first-round pick, but it seems more and more popular right now for these mock draft sites to be forecasting Draymond Green in the first round. He's slated to go anywhere from 20th to 35th, the latest I read, he was 28th pick going to Oklahoma City. That was off SportsIllustrated.com. I think it's a good thing for Draymond Green and the program at large. Michigan State hasn't had a ton of first-round NBA talent, and for Draymond Green to be recognized for his work ethic and his just that desire to win, I think it bodes well for what Tom Izzo's doing at Michigan State and and what Draymond Green did during his career. He, if you remember him as a freshman, he kind of came in a little bit round, and he left a pretty well-rounded player. So it's kind of a sign of satisfaction knowing that people are kind of becoming privy to what a lot of us in Big Ten country already knew about Draymond, and that he is a great player, and I'm glad to see that his work ethic and character has, seems like what's being having him considered for first-round talent. Otherwise, not just judging him solely based on what he can do with the ball. So that's my rant, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Well, let me take your first one first about Nick Fairley. If you remember, guys, about, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, maybe 10 to 15 years ago, actually, when the NBA was beginning to get a reputation of being a thug league and was being looked down on by folks as being a league of thugs, and you know, the tattoos and their players were brushing with the law, and there was a lot of you know, going back to Jason Williams with the murder thing. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that went on back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And the NBA, to their credit, I think, has kind of cleaned that up a little bit. But the NFL, unfortunately, it's not just happening in Detroit. I'm reading these kind of stories kind of pop up around the NFL that are kind of disturbing, which kind of is bringing the NFL, I think, under a spotlight that they don't really care to be put under. I don't know that anybody would necessarily disagree with you that Nick Fairley should be treated with a firmer hand rather than a soft one. I hope that's the way it indeed goes, because I don't think a guy like this is going to respond in any other way. And if he doesn't respond to that, then he's not going to respond anyway. So I think that's the route you got to take with him. As far as Draymond Green, I don't really want to comment so much as ask you a question, because as you were talking, it dawned on me, Adam, is Draymond Green the kind of a player that is more of a situational guy in terms of, it depends on what situation the team is in, whether in their development as a team, whether or not they take him. I mean, there's some talents that you take no matter what, because they're so good. I'm not disparaging Draymond Green, but is he a guy that has to be in the right situation for an NBA team to take him, to pick him in the draft, or is he a guy that could fit in pretty much anywhere and be a productive NBA player?
Well, and that's a really good question. I think for Draymond Green, I don't think that anybody disagrees if I were to say that Draymond Green isn't the most talented athlete out there. He's not. However, he's probably one of the hardest working, and they use that term basketball IQ and student of the game. And as coaches say it for a reason, because not everybody gets the, you know, just the subtleties of the game. It's not just shooting a ball, putting it in a basket. Draymond Green is a complete package in terms of basketball intelligence. I think if he's one of those players, if a team in the first round is going to take him, they're taking a gamble on, okay, we know that he's not a hugely explosive athlete. But maybe a team that's younger or lacking some sort of discipline or leadership. Because I think when you get Draymond Green, I'll put myself in the shoes of like an NBA executive, I would look at Draymond Green as more of the intangibles that he brings. Just based on his attitude and his leadership, I wouldn't look at Draymond Green and say, well, man, this guy is just going to be an athletic star for us. I think that Draymond Green might be one of those players who can bring out the best in the guys who are a little bit more talented than he is. He's been called a coach on the floor. He's been called a lot of stuff. You know, Tom Izzo spoke very highly of Draymond Green. And I think, you know, in the next couple of years, people who follow Michigan State basketball, it's really going to sink in on just how special of a guy Draymond Green was and what he meant to Michigan State. So to answer your question, I think, yeah, it's going to be based on a situation. It's going to be what type of team it is. I don't think he's going to fit in well with a run-and-gun, flashy sort of team. He'll be a guy that can go in there, give you some grunt minutes, but be kind of a head figure in the locker room rather than, you know, the guy that's going to be on SportsCenter every night.
Sure enough. Al, what you got for Adam in response to his rants?
No, the only thing I'd say about Nick Fairley, and obviously Greg and I are going to touch on this a little bit later when we talk Lions, is I saw the article that Adam is mentioning, you know, and about Gumpher kind of taking it soft on Fairley, And I got the impression, though, with Gunther that it was more of a good cop, bad cop thing. And I think pretty much the entire rest of the Lions franchise was bad cop. So he got to play good cop. And I'm not too concerned, though, about being soft unfairly. But the problem is, again, this is, well, we've talked about this in the past, is that in a lot of ways the Lions' hands are tied as to what they can do. They can be as hard as they want. No, they want. They might want to come down with him with the hammer, but the CBA and the NFL have precedence over what happens to Nick Fairley, and then the Lions can go from there. But I'm sure that right now, though, Nick Fairley could use a friend in the front office and in the coaching staff, and if it's going to be Gunther Cunningham, he could do a lot worse. As for Draymond Green, you know, I know if I believe Adam wrote on Yahoo that the word is that he's right now going to be a, probably a late first-round draft pick. It seems to me that would be the teams drafting later in the first round would probably be a great fit for him. Just in that he's going to go for a team that's established, and he won't be expected to carry a load or be a star or anything like that. And he could fit into some of these playoff teams right now and get, as Adam put, bench and give them grunt minutes, do dirty work, give them that 12-15 minutes a game, and be a very successful player and have a very long NBA career. Because I think, if anything, Green's going to stay in the NBA on the force of will. And there's one thing we've learned from him. He's got will to burn.
Absolutely. Adam Biggers, another great rant. But before we let Adam go, he does have something he wants to plug out, and we're going to absolutely let him do that. So why don't you talk about this venture you have with former Lion Herman Moore.
Okay, well, I don't want to get too detailed into it because it's still in its beginning phases. But I am now working very closely with former Detroit Lions wide receiver Herman Moore, and he has developed the best thing I could say about this website is, without giving too much away about it, is just wow. And it's if you're a follower of high school football recruiting, and you're accustomed to checking out other sites, Herman's new site called ScoutSpy.com will absolutely blow your mind. It is probably the most in-depth, comprehensive type of website regarding recruiting that I've ever seen. I'm very excited to be a part of this, and Herman has expressed the utmost confidence in my abilities, and I am I'm just glad to be, you know, on the same team with a guy like Herman. He's he actually developed the website himself. He's a big-time tech guru, which I did not know. So this guy is on the forefront of technology. So it'll launch in I'm guessing he said to me in about 2 to 4 weeks. So I'll put that on Facebook and on my Twitter at AdamBiggers81, and give the site a look. It's going to be a neat tool for anybody who's into college or high school football and the whole college recruiting phase.
Wonderful. Well, that's great news, and we're absolutely thrilled that you're able to and willing and to talk about it and plug it here on the Knee Jerks, and you're always welcome to do that, of course. Adam Biggers joins us on the first and third Monday of every month at 7:45 for Adam Rants. So we will see him again in 2 weeks on June the 18th. And be well, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it, guys. Have a good one. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, are you ready for your next clue, and whose birthday is it?
Fire away.
Okay, the first clue, he was born in 1957 in the Dominican Republic. Pittsburgh Pirates, free agent in 1975 as an amateur, switched from outfielder to the position he was most known for, where he won 4 gold gloves, was a 5-time All-Star, had a career .991 fielding percentage, played for the Pirates, Cardinals, Red Sox, Indians, White Sox, and Astros in that career. And he was also a former Manager of the Year.
Ah, let's see. He played with almost damn near every team in the major leagues. Be honest with you, I'm going to consider all the teams you mentioned. And he's a Dominican, which doesn't narrow it down that much. I think I'm going to wait for question 3 on this, where you practically give it away usually in question 3. I'm still not sure on this one. All right,
okay,
great. Let's move on to, well, let's talk Lions since Adam had brought it up. And we got all summer to talk Tigers. Obviously, we'll squeeze a little bit of Tigers in by the end of the show. We still got about 30 minutes. Now, by the way, you're listening to the Knee Jerks, Detroit Sports Talk with Eno and Big Al. as of course, we got to start with the Nick Fury arrest, as Adam was ranting about. Driving drunk, open intoxicant, driving 100 miles an hour. He actually that's what the cops clocked him at. All this after being busted for possession of marijuana 7 weeks previous while driving. Obviously, Greg, there's going to be a suspension in the offing. If he wasn't going to get suspended for the first offense, then it was very possible he wasn't because, again, it was a first offense in the eyes of the NFL, and that often means you get put into the substance abuse program and you're kind of on probation. The second time is when they start coming at you, when they start taking money away from you and taking games away from you, and I'm sure that's probably what's going to happen here. But I don't really know what to say about this other than, sure, he's young and stupid. I know I did a lot of really dumb stuff when I was 20, 21, 22 years old as well. But then again, I wasn't making millions. I didn't have a contract worth tens of millions of dollars either when I was acting stupid. So I really don't know what to make of this other than obviously Nick Fairley, for some reason, thought he could get away with it. And I guess the problem is one mistake – sure, I can understand, he screwed up, he can make a mea, he can apologize, move on, let's not happen again, but for him to do the same damn thing 7 weeks later, while he still has even gotten the courts all taken care of, the court case taken care of on the first charge, it really makes me wonder about what the hell this guy is thinking, obviously, the answer would be he's not thinking, but it's really disturbing that now, with Fairley, and that means that four of the draft picks last year have been involved in some sort of a drug-related bust of one way or another. I'm not really sure what else to say about this other than it was stupid. The Lions have to be obviously pissed, but they can't really do or say anything because of the CBA. And I have a feeling when this is all said and done, he's going to miss four games. The NFL is going to come down with him with a hammer, and he really will be. For all the people.
We seem to have lost the connection to Big Al, apparently. I know sometimes he has some internet issues, so we will assume that that's the case. Again, now I am Greg Eno from GregEno.com. You're listening to The Knee Jerks, Detroit Sports Talk with Attitude. And I can be reached right every week, of course, at GregEno.com. And Big Al, Al being from the Wayne Fonts Experience, WayneFonts.com, can be read at WayneFonts.com. And plus you boys.com, where he's also a major contributor there, and also heard on the Plus You Boys podcast every week where they talk Tigers. Next week we will be having, for our second show of season four, we will be having Bob Page. Our old friend Bob Page, former New York and Detroit sportscaster, will be with us on June the 11th, a week from tonight, talking about whatever the heck Bob Page wants to talk about is basically how that goes. And then 2 weeks from tonight, another edition of Adam Rants with Adam Biggers on the 18th. And then on June 25th, stay tuned to Twitter and all our Facebook and our blog. The Twitter, of course, is thenejerks.info. The blog is thenejerks.us. And, of course, Facebook is facebook.com/thenejerks. That's how you can find out what's going on with the program via the Internet. And if you want to drop us a line, which we don't really ask enough probably for people to do, you can write us at thenejerks@gmail.com. So that's all the particulars out of the way there. And Al apparently is still not with us. Dropped his internet connection apparently, so we're just going to have to kind of wait and see if he's going to come back, and if he's not, then we'll probably have to say goodbye early because there's really nobody else for me to talk to, basically. I also wanted to mention as well that we are starting our fourth season, and probably sometime in the 6 months from now, I'm guessing sometime around November, Al and I are going to try an experiment where we're actually going to try to be in the same room at the same time. Well, some people who listen to this program might be a little bit surprised to know that when Al and I do the show, we are not, of course, in the same room. I'm on my phone, and he's back at the command center in Auburn Hills and operating everything, the switchboard and everything over there. We don't look at each other. We don't talk to each other in person.
We just don't. And we were talking about that, excuse me, on the 30-year anniversary show a couple weeks ago, that maybe it's time to, it's time to change that. Excuse me. Well, it's time for me to get a tickle. It's time for us to change that and actually be in the same room at the same time. And so we're going to probably try to do that sometime October, November, in our half-year anniversary show, if you will, to actually do a special edition of the Knee-Jerks where Al and I are actually together, physically together. But right now it looks like Al is still not with us. Looks like his internet connection has gone bust. So we may have to say goodbye for this episode of the Knee-Jerks. We were going to talk about, of course, the Tigers. We were talking about Nick Fairley briefly before Al left us. We were going to talk about the Tigers, but that's kind of a depressing topic anyway, so I don't think a lot of folks will be disappointed to find out we're not going to be able to talk about that tonight. There's always plenty of the baseball season left to talk about the Tigers, of course. So we spent most of tonight's program talking about Nick Lidstrom, as we should have, and honoring his legacy and talking about his place in the NHL and where the Tigers go from, where the Red Wings go from here, and after Nick Lidstrom, and that's the way it should be, really. The story of that magnitude should dominate, and it's fitting that we pretty much devoted most of this episode to Nick Lidstrom. So, with that, it looks like we're going to have to say goodbye early tonight. We will get with we'll get back to our Jerks of the Week next week. By the way, the answer to the whose birthday is it question was Tony Pena, the All-Star catcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates and all those other teams that I mentioned. Tony Pena, who is now the bench coach for the New York Yankees, is 55 years old today. So happy birthday, Tony Pena. So he was the mystery guest, the mystery name of whose birthday is it tonight, Tony Pena. So with that, I am Greg Eno from GregEno.com. That's where you can read me every day of the week. You can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/GregEno. Follow the Knee-Jerks on Twitter, theKneeJerks.info. Follow our blog, theKneeJerks.us. And follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheKneeJerks. And next week, Bob Page, and 7 o'clock Eastern time on Monday night. And with that, I am Greg Eno. And for Al Beaton, who unfortunately had to drop out of the discussion early, you have been listening to The Knee-Jerks. Good night, and we'll see you next week, everybody. Ciao, Italy. Good night.